Today we will present the last theoretical topic in this course. It is about three-dimensional vision. About this topic, there will not be a practical lab for you, a practical assignment, because we are already at the end of the scholar year, and it's not a good idea to put too much stress on the students on the last week. Okay? But we will study from a theoretical point of view which are the problems in three-dimensional vision and some of the techniques that are actually used to solve vision in 3D. We will study a little about how to model the geometry of a camera, how to calibrate a camera, and then how to resolve the problem of three-dimensional vision using two or more cameras, what is known as stereo vision. We'll see that the main difficulty will be correspondence search. Search for correspondences of the same object or the same point or the same feature in several images. And using this, with the math we will study here, it's possible to recover the three-dimensional information about the environment. Okay. Well, the main problem with cameras is that a camera obtains a two-dimensional projection of the world that is three-dimensional. Then there is one dimension missing in an image. When you see an image, you don't know exactly the depth of things. Well, this is the main reason why it's so easy to make special effects, even in the old times when they did the special effects by hardware, you know, using computers. It's quite easy to put a ship in a small tub of water and film that and make you think it was a big transatlantic in the sea. Why? Because in a two-dimensional projection, you don't have an idea of depth. If you don't know the depth of the object, you don't know the size. Okay? If a film was a three-dimensional film, it's not possible anymore to make this kind of trick. Okay? Then the problem of three-dimensional vision is having only two-dimensional projections of the world. Is it possible to recover the three-dimensional information of the world? Well, it is possible, but we need two or more images. Well, the idea is using, for example, two cameras. We will call this system a binocular stereo system. It's possible to recover three-dimensional information. Well, the proof is in your face. You have two eyes, okay? And both eyes are looking on the forward direction. Usually in nature, this is a very good way to distinguish predators from the prey. Prey animals usually can have two eyes looking to the sides with very few intersection of the field of view. Okay? Because for a prey, it's important to detect the lion for in whatever direction he comes. Okay? On the contrary, predators usually have two eyes in the front of the head looking forward. Because for a predator to catch a prey, it's necessary to know the depth of the prey to be able to get and trap him. Actually, there are many predators that if they lose vision in one eye, they are dead, because they are not able anymore to catch prey. For example, here I've seen it's called eagle, a kind of eagle. I've seen a kind of eagle here in a center for recovering of birds that has lost one eye. They cannot throw again this eagle to the nature because he will not be able to trap a prey anymore. Okay. Then the idea of stereo vision is more or less the idea we use with our eyes. The question is, we have two eyes with a small separation between them. More or less, both eyes see more or less the same area. There is a big intersection in the field of view. And the trick is quite simple. If you put a finger in front of your eyes and you look with one eye and one with the other eye alternatively, you will see that you see your finger differently from one eye and from the other eye. Okay? If the finger is very close, the difference is big. If the finger is very, very far away, you cannot notice any difference from the two eyes. Okay? Then, the closer is a thing, the bigger the difference when looking with one eye or the other eye. Then simply, our mind is perfectly equipped to match the finger in both eyes, to compute the differences between the image of this finger, and to figure out the depth to this object. Okay? As simple as that. Well, this idea is the idea that we will use in stereo vision. Of course, if you have more cameras, more eyes, better, you can have better precision in computing the depth of an object. Okay, it's also possible to recover depth using only one camera. The question is to move the camera. And if you only have one eye, you can figure out the depth of the thing by moving your head. As simple as that. Okay? You make a small motion of the head. If the thing doesn't change, it's far away. If the thing changes very much, it's very close. That's it. Okay? There are many animals that have this kind of motion, lateral motion of the head. Probably it's to help computing depth to objects. Okay? But the mathematical idea is exactly the same, taking images from different points, in this case different points in space and in time, because you have to move the camera, you can figure out the three-dimensional information of the environment. Okay, what do we need to solve this problem to imitate nature with a computer? Mainly we need a mathematical model of the camera. Mainly the camera geometry and the camera optics. And then, if we have this mathematical model, the only problem remaining, that is the main difficulty, is searching for correspondences. I mean, being able to identify this object in my left image correspond to this object in my right image. Okay? The difficulty of doing that is very dependent on the environment. Okay? Suppose if there is a fly in this room and there is only one, you take one image with the left eye and with the right eye, the fly in your left image is the fly in your right image, no problem, you can compute the depth very easily. Okay? The problem is that if you have 1,000 flies here in the room, flying around, it's very difficult to know which fly in the left image corresponds to which fly in the right image. Okay? If you are not able to tell which one is which one, it's impossible to compute the depth of the flies. As simple as that. Okay? Well, we will comment a little about this problem searching for correspondences. First, we will concentrate on the mathematical modeling of cameras to be able to solve the problem. Then for this we will study the most used camera model, that is the Tsai camera model. Well, a camera model allows us to compute the projection of three-dimensional points. How do they correspond to coordinates in the images, in our image? Then this projection function takes two parameters. One is the three-dimensional coordinates of the point, and the second parameter is a set of camera parameters. Okay? Then this function is a mathematical function that allows us to compute the coordinates of this three-dimensional point inside our image. It depends on two kinds of parameters: internal cameral parameters, or intrinsic parameters, that corresponds to the camera geometry and the optics that we attach to the front of the camera, and sometimes in old analogic cameras it corresponds also to the interface between our camera and the computer, to the acquisition card. Okay? In computer cameras, in digital cameras, usually the image in the camera corresponds exactly to the image we get in the computer. Then there is no necessity to convert anything. And then, essentially, the internal camera parameters correspond to the geometry and the optics. But there is also the external camera parameters that correspond mainly with the position and orientation of the camera. Where is the camera located in space? Then the problem of calibration corresponds is to determine the values, the appropriate values for the internal and external camera parameters. When we don't know these values exactly, that is always, we need to calibrate the cameras. Well, then next we will analyze how this projection, what's the mathematical form of this projection function. Then, first thing that we need to study is a transformation of coordinates between reference frames. For example, if we know the coordinates of a point relative to the world reference, suppose that I put here on the left downside of my drawing, I have a reference that I call world reference, that is my absolute reference. For example, here in the corner of the room, I say I will referenciate all coordinates to this reference system. Okay? And suppose I know the coordinates of a point with respect to my absolute reference. Okay? Well, of course, the projection of the point in the camera depends on the coordinates of the point with respect to the camera. Then we have to transform the coordinates of the point that are expressed with respect to the absolute reference to coordinates with respect to the camera. This is the first step. Then this transformation can be done with this equation in the upper right part of the slide. The coordinates with respect to the camera can be computed as a rotation matrix R multiplied by the absolute coordinates of the point plus a translation vector. Then this translation vector has three coordinates, and the rotation matrix is a 3x3 matrix. Okay? This is a very usual form to express any transformation between any two coordinate systems. Then these two parameters, R and T, rotation matrix and translation vector, corresponds in this case to the position and orientation of the world reference system with respect to the camera. Let's see an example of how to compute these values in simple cases. Well, the most common way to express this same equation we have in slide number 4, this equation of transformation, can be expressed in a more compact way using homogeneous transformations. Here in the fifth slide, we have the first equation corresponding to the same exactly the same transformation, but using homogeneous coordinates. The homogeneous coordinates of the point in the absolute reference are in the right part, correspond to the three coordinates, and this is a scale factor that usually we put a 1 in this coordinate. Then the rotation and the translation part are here inside matrix T, and this matrix T is the homogeneous transformation of the world reference with respect to the camera. And this is a matrix that you take the homogeneous coordinates of a point in the absolute reference, and multiplying by this matrix you obtain the coordinates, the homogeneous coordinates of the point with respect, in this case, to the camera. Okay? These transformations, T, can be inverted. For example, if we compute the inverse of this transformation, we obtain TWC that corresponds to the position and orientation of the camera with respect to the world reference. Then, usually these subscripts are always read in the same way. In the first case, TCW represents the transformation of the world reference with respect to the camera, and this is the opposite, it's the transformation of the camera coordinates with respect to the world coordinates. Okay? Then T is a matrix that if we multiply it with coordinates in one reference, the result corresponds to the coordinates in the other reference. Very simple. Then, well, to invert a transformation, we don't need to use, to call a matrix inversion function, because it happens that this rotation matrix is a very special one. It's an orthonormal matrix. It means that his rows have norm unity, and his rows or his columns are perpendicular between them, are orthogonal to each other. Okay? And this implies that to invert R, it's enough to transpose it. The inverse of R corresponds to the transpose of R, and then to invert the translation part, we have to compute this thing, the transpose of the rotation part multiplied by the old translation, and change the sign. Okay? Then to invert this 4x4 matrix, it's enough to compute a transpose of a 3x3 matrix and a product of this matrix by a vector, which is quite simple. Okay, then the most tricky part of how to obtain a homogeneous transformation is to figure out the values for the rotation matrix. The translation is very easy, we will see an example. It's simply to compute the coordinates of the origin of one reference system into the other to obtain these coordinates, quite simple. But the rotation part, if we are not used to, is not that easy. Well, the rotation part may be the easiest way to figure out this rotation matrix is to decompose the change in orientation in three rotations. Then any reference system can be rotated to match any other, making three rotations in this order. One rotation around the Z axis, a second rotation around the Y axis, and a third rotation around the X axis. Okay? Then if we are able to figure out which values we need for these three angles of rotation, then the rotation matrix R has this form. Okay? Well, this form may look a little strange. One thing that you can check, that you could check out, is that this matrix is orthonormal. For example, the norm of the last row is unity. We compute this value squared plus this value squared plus this value squared, the result is unity, because you will find the typical sinus squared plus cosinus squared that gives 1. Here, S theta represents sinus of theta, and C theta represents cosinus. Okay? Then, if you know the three angles of rotation, you can obtain the rotation matrix. The opposite is also true. Okay? If you know the rotation matrix, you could solve these equations and obtain the three values of the angles. Let's see an example. Okay? Suppose that we have our absolute reference system in this position, and we have a camera that is located in this way. Okay? Where the camera is at 10 meters in the y axis and 5 meters in the z axis with respect to the absolute reference, and the reference system of the camera is in this way. Usually for cameras we put the reference system in the optical center of the lens, okay? At this we'll see a little later what exactly I mean of this optical center. We put the reference system in the optical center, and it's typical to have the Z axis looking to the front of the camera, and then the X and Y axis corresponds more or less to the rows and columns of the pixels in our image, but in this case X and Y will be in meters and row and column will be in pixels. We will talk about that later. Okay, then suppose that we have this camera. Let's look first at the orientation. We have this camera orientation, and we want to know what's the rotation matrix that corresponds to the location of the world reference system with respect to the camera. Okay? Then, the way of finding out the rotation matrix in this case can be, let's try to find three rotations that are able to align the camera with the absolute reference systems. Okay? Then, in this case, for example, first let's do a rotation of 0 degrees around Z, then don't move it. Then, let's do a rotation of minus 90 degrees in the Y axis. Okay? Then, I take this reference system, put it here, and rotation of minus 90 degrees, you have to use the screwdriver rule, then 90 degrees will be rotating the first reference system in such a way that Z comes out of the drawing. Okay? This will be 90 degrees, then minus the 90 degrees is rotating in the other direction where the Z axis is looking inside your paper. Okay? Then first rotation. And then a second rotation of 90 degrees around the X axis. Then if I take this reference, the second reference system, and make a rotation of 90 degrees around X, then Z becomes looking in the upward direction, and Y looking to the inside of the drawing. Okay? Then with these two rotations, the camera system, the camera and reference system, is parallel to the absolute reference. Then it's done. The three rotations needed are 0 around Z, minus 90 degrees around Y, and 90 degrees around X. Okay? Then, knowing these three values, if I go to the slide number 5, I can replace the three values for the angles and compute the matrix. Okay? In this expression. And the result is this thing. It's a matrix that is clearly an orthonormal matrix. The norm of all the rows or all the columns is unity, and in this case, for example, the three columns are perpendicular, are orthonormal to each other, orthogonal to each other. Sorry. Well, these columns have also a very easy to interpret meaning. The first column is the projection of the x-axis of the world reference in the reference of the camera. Then the first column corresponds to this, to the x-axis of the world reference projected into the camera. Then this reference this x-axis corresponds to the z-axis, then it's 0, 0, 1. Okay? I repeat, the x-axis of the absolute reference, if it's projected on the camera, it corresponds to the z-axis. Then the coordinates of this unity vector will be 0, 0, 1. Okay? Same for the second. The y-axis of the absolute reference corresponds to the minus x-axis in the camera. Then it's minus 1, 0, 0. Okay? And same for the z-axis. Z-axis corresponds to minus y. Then it's 0, minus 1, 0. Then, for these cases that are very simple, it's very easy to figure out the value of the rotation matrix. It's enough to look to the three column vectors, the three axes of the absolute reference, and figure out which will be their coordinates in the camera reference system. Okay? This is because in this case all rotations are 90 degrees, or that is the simplest case. Okay? Is that clear? Well, then, if we have obtained the rotation part, we put in the homogeneous transformation, the rotation part corresponds to the three first rows and columns, are this submatrix here. Okay? And the rest, the fourth column, corresponds to the translation part. Corresponds to the position of the wall reference system with respect to the camera. Then the wall reference system is located at 10 meters in X and 5 meters in Y. Then the translation is 10, 5, 0. Okay? Very easy. Translation is never a big problem. The main difficulty is to figure out the value for the rotations. Okay? Then, this is the homogeneous transformation that allows us to transform coordinates in the world reference to coordinates in the camera reference. What if we want to do the opposite transformation? Then we need to invert this homogeneous transformation, and in this case, the inverse is this expression, this matrix here. You can see that this matrix has exactly the same meaning. Last column corresponds to the position of the camera in absolute coordinates. Then the camera here is located at 0 in X, 10 in Y, and 5 in Z. 0, 10, 5. Okay? And the rotation part corresponds to the projection of the axis of the reference system of the camera into the absolute reference. Then the x-axis of the camera is the minus y, 0, minus 1, 0. Okay? The y-axis of the camera is in the opposite direction of the z-axis in the absolute reference, then 0, 0, minus 1. And finally, the z-axis of the camera is looking in the x direction, in the x absolute direction, then it's 1, 0, 0. Okay? Does it make sense? Okay. Then, this is simply an example of how, effectively, these homogeneous transformations are able to transform coordinates of one point from one system to the other. For example, if we know the coordinates of this point, in the absolute reference, this point in the absolute reference has coordinates 10, 7, 6. Okay? And if we multiply these coordinates by the matrix, the homogeneous transformation between the camera and the wall reference, we obtain these values, 10 minus 3 minus 1, 10, that corresponds exactly to the coordinates of the point with respect to the camera. Okay? Then, if we know the transformation, the homogeneous transformation between both reference systems, we can transform any point from one reference to the other, and by multiplying by the inverse from the other to the first. Okay? Yes, please.
What do we need the fourth row?
For nothing. Okay. The fourth row in our homogeneous transformation, in a rigid transformation, is always 0, 0, 0, 1. Why is it needed? Simply to put everything in only one product of matrices. Okay? If you go back to slide number 4, you can compute the transformation, you can compute the change in coordinates using a product in this way plus an addition. Okay? This makes that the expression is a little more complicated, that if you put everything inside an homogeneous matrix where you only have to multiply by the matrix. Okay? More general answer. There are other cases. You can obtain different effects by changing the values of this last row. Transformations are more general than rigid motions that are this case. Transformations with 0, 0, 0, 1 in the last row represent rigid motions. But for example, if instead of putting here a 1, I put here a 2, this represents a change in size. If I put here different values, this could represent a squeeze. For example, a rectangle will be transformed in a squeezed rectangle. Okay? Then last row can be used to changes in scale or changes in shape of objects. Usually, for transforming coordinates, is always 0, 0, 0, 1. Okay? This is a very compact representation because only with one product you can represent changes in coordinates. Then, for example, what happens is very useful, is very much used in robotics. For example, suppose that you have a table, okay, with an object on top of it, and you put a box on top of this object, and you want to know the coordinates of this point. Okay? Then suppose that you know, for example, you want to compute which are the transformation between the reference system of this object with respect to the absolute reference system. Okay? This is an object, I will call it O. And I will put another reference system here, it is called T, the table. And suppose that I know which is the transformation between the absolute reference and the table, and we know the transformation between the table and the object. Okay? Then, for example, I know the coordinates of a point P with respect to the object. How to compute the coordinates of point P with respect to the absolute reference? Okay? Then, coordinates of point P with respect to the absolute reference, I will put PW, can be computed using this expression. Transformation of the table with respect to the absolute reference multiplied by transformation of the object with respect to the table, multiply by coordinates of the point with respect to the object. That's it. Okay? For checking out this equation, I only need to check out the order in the letters, in the subscripts. Okay? This says PW, W. Okay? WT, TO, O. Correctly ordered. This transforms from O to T, and this transforms from T to W. The result is coordinates of point P in W. That's it. Okay, no hands. No guessing. Very easy. Okay? Of course, this could be also done with rotation matrix and translation vectors, but it's much more complicated. Using homogeneous transformations, you can compose several changes of reference in a simple, very compact expression. Okay? That's the main reason why we use homogeneous transformations. Okay. Well, then first step was to, we have the point, we compute the coordinates of the point with respect to the camera. Second step is to compute the projection of the point in the image plane of the camera. Then, here usually, well, we use a typical trick in computer vision. That is, usually cameras, the geometry of a camera consists mainly of an optical center, C, that is located in the center of the objective of our lens, and then the camera has a sensor on the back of the camera. Okay? Then the lens, what the lens does is to all the rays of light that come from the object pass through the optical center and get projected on the image plane. A point here will go through the optical center, and then on our sensor we will obtain an image of the objects that are in the environment, but invert, okay, upside down, and also inverted in the left-right direction. Okay? Then, in all cameras, the optical center is in front of the image plane. The image plane is in the sensor, inside the camera. The optical center is in the middle of the lens, in front of the camera. Okay? The main parameter of a lens is the distance between the image plane and the optical center, that is the focal length f. Okay? Well, usually in computer vision, what we do is to draw the image plane in front of the camera. Then this is a virtual image plane at the same distance f, but we draw it for simplicity in front of the camera. Why? Because in this virtual image plane, objects are in the correct position. Okay, we don't need to change the sign in the coordinates. Okay? Then this corresponds to this drawing. The optical center corresponds to the reference system C, okay, that has the Z axis looking along the central axis of the lens, okay, and the X and Y axis, in this case, aligned with the rows and columns of our images. Okay? Then, how to compute the coordinates of a point, of the projection of a point inside the image plane, this virtual image plane in front of the camera, of course. In the real image plane, the coordinates will be the same, but with all signs changed, with minus signs. Okay. Then to compute the projection, simply you can look at the geometry of the problem. In this image, for example, this triangle here is proportional to this triangle here. Okay. Then simply by using the rules of proportional triangles, we can see that the depth to the point is proportional to the local, to the focal length f, same as, for example, the x or the y coordinate is proportional to the y coordinate inside the image plane. Okay? Then, This gives exactly this expression. Of course, I need to use coordinates. I'm talking about coordinates with respect to the camera. Okay? In this case, you will write set coordinate with respect to the camera divided by f must be the same that the y coordinate of the point with respect to the camera divided by the y coordinate inside the sensor. Okay? Then, if you transform this, this gives that the y coordinate with respect inside the image plane is equal to y coordinate of the point divided by z coordinate of the point multiplied by the focal length of our lens. Okay, that is the expression you have here. Okay? Can you see it? Same for x. Exactly the same. If you look at this triangle here, you get the relationship for y, and if you look to the horizontal triangle, you get the same relationship for x. Okay? Then, here you can see what's the effect of f. F is a magnifying factor. If you use a lens with very big focal length, this is what you see when the paparazzi are making photographs of people. They have a camera with a lens that big. Okay? Why? Because the focal length of a lens is related with the physical length of the lens. Okay? It's actually the distance between the central, between the optical center and the back of the camera. Then, if you look, if you have a lens with 1 meter focal length, it must be that big, 1 meter. Okay? Then, these lenses are able to take big photographs of things that are very far away. Okay? On the contrary, the opposite is lenses with very small focal length are used when we want to obtain a very wide angle of view. For example, if we want to take a photograph of a landscape, we need a very short lens such that the angle of the angle of view is very wide. Well, the reason is if the size of the camera is fixed, if the size of the image plane is fixed, the film inside a camera has a height of 24 millimeters. Okay? This is the film of a camera. If you put the optical center very far away, the angle of view is small. If you put the optical center very close, the angle of view is very wide. As simple as that. Okay? Then, if you want to take a photograph of a big landscape, you need a very short focal length in your lens. If you take a photograph of an animal, of a lion, whatever, you want a large focal length. Okay? And focal length is related to the magnifying in your image. If you double the focal length, you double, for the rest of things being equal, you double the size of the things in your image. Okay? Then, these are the basic equations to compute coordinates of the points inside our image plane. Then, take into account here that focal length is a dimension, usually, for example, in millimeters. Okay? The rest of coordinates will be also dimensions, of course, for example, also in millimeters. Then you will obtain the coordinates of the point in the image plane in millimeters, in the same units. Okay? What else do we need? We need to take into account distortions inside our lenses. What time is it? You have 10 past 12 already? Okay. Then I'll make a break, 10 minutes break here, and continue later.